Hello and welcome to Don't Pee on Your Leg and Other Scientific Misconceptions, where we talk about scientific misconceptions we all have, and we hope that you learn something new about the world. Joining me, as always, is my co-host, Margaret. They're playing my song, Hanslick Burton.
And joining me, as always, is my co-host, Camden, Lady Camden, Hanslick Burton.
Welcome to the show! Margaret, our first segment, as you might remember, because it's been a bit, is where we share something we're excited about.
Yeah.
What are you excited about?
I am very excited. Dog hair in my mouth. I am very excited because I'm going to go travel to New York City this weekend, and I'm going to get to see my sister and my brother-in-law and their dog, and also New York City, but, you know, the dog's really important.
Mostly the dog.
Mostly the dog. So I'm really excited about that. What are you excited about?
I'm just excited we're back. It has been a minute.
It's been a minute.
Episode 65 was a while ago.
Yes, it was.
Life, you know, everyone
finds a way.
Well, I was going to say life has been kind of hard, but yeah, we're
tracking along.
Yeah, I hope we're back on it, and we'll hopefully get you some more regular episodes.
We will.
Uh-huh.
And we can. Yep.
And because we can, we're going to go on to our next segment, which is What Is That Sound? Margaret, cue our regular theme music.
What is that sound? I say it, oh, what is that sound?
Our segment, What Is That Sound? We keep with the spirit of the show where one of us researches something the other doesn't know about. Except here, I found a song, Margaret.
A song?
Sound.
You said a song.
Oh, yeah.
Too much hurdle.
That you don't know, and I'm gonna play it for you. It has been a minute.
Holy goodness. It's been a long day.
No, it's not just been a long day. It's been a
long time.
So, yeah, I'm gonna play it, and you have to guess it, and that's how we do this game.
And it's gonna be something scientific-ish, right?
Yes, as always. Yes.
As always.
No, I'm not playing you just a random pop song. No.
Great. Okay.
All right. Here is number one.
Okay. I am going to guess maybe a stork. I felt like maybe a stork from underwater.
A stork from underwater?
Like the microphone is underwater.
Uh-huh.
And okay. The stork is above water, and we can hear it making a little like burr, 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 noise.
I like that. Burr, burr, all right. Burr. So we've got a mic above water.
No, below water.
Below water. And a stork is like looking at a fish or something.
Mm-hmm. Or a heron.
Or look, a heron's looking at a fish.
Uh-huh.
All right. We're going to give it another shot.
Okay. Now I'm less sure. It sounds like deep water.
Okay.
And I don't think herons or storks can...
You are right that it is underwater.
Okay. Cool. Okay. It sounds like... it could be like... Oh, what are those? They're called like the vents, like steam vents coming up. Those really, really hot areas of the
thermal
ocean.
Thermal vents.
Thank you. Yes. That's my guess now. That's a thermal vent. Thank
underwater
you.
Heron thermal vents.
Yes.
Margaret,
yes.
It is underwater.
Oh.
It is not a thermal vent.
Oh.
And it's not that deep. That is the sound of a coral reef.
Oh, just a general sound.
So all the sounds around. So you're right. You heard fish. You heard general blubs, you know, coral blubs.
Mm-hmm.
Why is this important? So the folks at Woods Hole Oceanographic. Yeah? Help me. What's that word?
Oceanographic?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You say yeah if you just don't say the full word. Yeah, those folks over at that institute.
Oh, gosh.
For reef solutions, has been studying what do healthy coral reefs sound like.
Mm-hmm.
The reason for that is because they have learned that, you might remember this from your work as working at an aquarium.
You wouldn't know coral... it from how I pronounce oceanographic. Oceanographic. Okay.
It doesn't sound right. Nothing sounds right anymore. That coral don't start as like these like...
hardened structures.
Hardened, mm-hmm. set like immobile structures. Mm-hmm. Their larva stage is... Mm-hmm. They can move.
Yeah.
They're mobile.
Mm-hmm.
And so their larva will move through the ocean, find a spot, and settle, and then grow up.
Mm-hmm.
There are scientists studying that maybe the larva know where to settle based off sound and the vibrations.
Whoa.
And so as...
I've heard of this now. Keep going.
As the world, like, as ocean, like, sound pollution occurs, and mm-hmm. also coral bleaching and climate change and all this, it's not... We're trying to figure out, scientists are trying to figure out why might this be playing, like, what other ways might this be wreaking havoc on the corals? Mm-hmm. And one of them might be is interfering with how things normally sound,
mm-hmm.
making it harder for larvae to settle in the correct places. So they're doing research as to not only what does it sound like, but are there artificial ways to create these sounds?
Okay, that's what I've heard of.
Mm-hmm. And... like, what are the key sound signatures, right? Because not all sounds are, like, what they're cueing in on. So, mm-hmm. like, what is it? So, I thought that was really cool.
That's so cool. That's so cool. Nice sound, Camden.
Oh, thanks. Margaret, mm-hmm. we got to thank our Patreon supporters for just being
sticking it out with us, man, honestly.
If you're still here, good on
you. Yeah, thank you, really. I know that there are lots of podcasters that have... full-time jobs, besides their podcast, obviously. So do we. And they have just been, both of our jobs have been pretty wild recently.
Yeah.
So thanks for sticking it out. I have some pretty cool ideas and stuff coming down the pike for bonus content for our Patreon subscribers soon. So,
Oh, a little tease.
Yeah.
Well, okay, so Margaret, if I want to get in on the mm-hmm. ground level here,
mm-hmm.
and I want to make sure that I don't miss any of the fun bonus content.
You can't.
And you cannot. You can't. You shouldn't.
Oh, we won't.
What do I
you.
Do?
Well, great question. You can just go to patreon.com/don'tpeeonyourleg. If you'd be so kind, and if you're able to, you can choose one of three support levels. The top two levels earn you access to bonus content,
which I've heard very recently that there might be some cool stuff mm-hmm. coming down the line, mm-hmm. so mm-hmm. I'd get in there if I were you.
Yeah,
before we close it down,
we're not gonna do that anytime.
Please support us and, you know, gain access for some fun stuff at patreon.com/don'tpeeonyourleg. Margaret,
yes, you've started every segment like this so far.
Yeah, that's how mm-hmm. I start things.
Okay.
Do you remember what's next in the show?
The misconceptions.
I forgot that that was.
Oh, really?
What's next? Yeah.
That's not great.
No, it's been a bit. We keep saying that too. So this is a main segment you might remember where we bring a scientific misconception to share, explain, and discuss. As a note, as always, each of us have researched our misconceptions separately in a soundproof, sense-proof container. So no. senses, smells, sounds,
mm-hmm.
anything
feelings.
Gets in or out, feelings, uh-huh. emotionless chamber.
Uh-huh.
And we emerge from it when we have a full breadth of research.
Mm-hmm.
Margaret has a dog treat.
We flip locked, to determine who goes first.
Locked and loaded.
One side is big and one side is small.
So I'm going to go big.
You're going to go big side?
The big dog in this house.
Oh, gosh. Okay. I'm going to try to flip it before anyone eats it. You're the big side?
Olympia's okay. And Satchel are sleeping right next to it.
Okay.
They did not get up. I think that's
big side.
Big side
that's
up.
The big side. All right, all right, you get to go first.
Big dog.
We'll see who discovers it.
Goes big side.
Nope.
Margaret.
Mm-hmm.
You're trying to escape some TIE fighters in your escape from Alderaan, and you decide that you need to go. Is this making sense so far?
Star Wars.
Yeah, Star Wars.
Uh-huh.
All right, you're in space.
Okay.
You're in a spaceship, right? And you are trying to escape, and the shortcut is through an asteroid field. Good idea, bad idea to run through an asteroid field.
Bad idea. You're gonna get pummeled. You're gonna become just a little grease spot on the L&M.
Well, we're all using words the other doesn't know, huh?
Oh, brother, where art thou? Come on.
Okay. Margaret, is that true? Are asteroid fields dangerous?
I'm going to guess no, based on you based being here telling me this.
This show existing. All right, Margaret, we're going to investigate how dangerous, if at all, are asteroid fields. But first, you got to ask.
What is an asteroid field?
What's an asteroid? Well, first, let's start with that.
An asteroid is a little chunk that has come off other larger chunks.
So this is, I'm giving you a face like I know. I did not know this. Okay. Like, I did not remember all of this.
Right.
You are right. One of the terms is a chunk of something, but that's an asteroid. So an asteroid is like the papa thing, the paternal chunk.
Very it's gendered
term. It's a big space rock.
Okay.
I'm just going to use
an asteroid general is a big term. Space
an
rock.
An asteroid is a big space rock. And then a piece that breaks off
is an asteroidlet.
Asteroidlet, yeah. is a meteoroid. Oh, so asteroid... bigger. I should have looked at the root words to understand which one.
That's well,
aster means star.
Mm-hmm. And meteor means more meaty than another thing.
Yeah.
That was good.
Yeah, it was.
Okay.
So an asteroid, big space rock, meteorite. A meteoroid is a something that breaks off from that asteroid. So meteoroids being smaller, mm-hmm. at least at some level, because it broke off.
So there's a meteoroid mm-hmm. and a meteoroid. Right.
So the meteoroid is, let's say, hurtling at Earth. As it enters the Earth's atmosphere, what starts to happen to it?
Hot.
And it starts streaking through the sky. Mm-hmm. We call that a...
shooting star.
Sure. What is the technical term of a like streaking meteoroid
Comet.
Through the atmosphere? It's a different word. This is a meteor.
Oh, Camden.
Okay. So, asteroid in space, big rock, okay. breaks off. What do we call that?
A meteorite. Meteoroid.
Yes. Roid and roid go together. So, asteroid, the meteoroid. Uh-huh. That meteoroid enters the Earth's atmosphere,
streaks
starts to...
through the sky. It yep. is a meteor.
Yes. All right. And then it hits Earth's surface,
oh, no.
if it makes it there.
Uh-huh.
And you collect it and put it in a little jar. We call those...
fossils. Dirt.
People, there's only one of these things that people can collect, and those are meteorites. So, like, a meteorite, people, like, can possess. And people do, right?
Are you allowed to? I guess you are.
Yeah. I think it's very hard.
Yeah.
But, yeah, people have meteorites.
I guess you're allowed to. You're allowed
so
to.
So, that's, a, like, I think that's what helps me remember, like, a meteorite is a thing that people, like, can have in their hand.
Okay.
Later. No, I wouldn't grab it right away.
No. Okay.
So, asteroid in space... chunk breaks. You walk me through it.
Okay. Asteroid, big chunk in yep. space.
Space rock.
Little bit breaks off. That's a meteoroid.
Yep.
Streaking through the sky. That's a meteor.
Once it hits Earth's atmosphere.
Once it hits the ground, it's a meteorite.
Very good.
Thank you.
And then something that is not a chunk of rock, but is just a ball of ice and dust
mm-hmm.
streaking through space.
Comet.
Is a comet. It's like Halley's
That makes sense
comet.
Because Halley's Comet, it doesn't hit Earth.
No.
And then bounce back into space and then come yeah. around every so
that's,
often.
Oh, that's a helpful way to remember it,
Thank
though.
You.
I mean, I would not have... Yeah, so in a comet is ice and dust particles. Okay. It mm-hmm. is not rock.
Okay.
And it's streaking because it is ice. So it is like literally, like it is vaporizing that ice... which is why it has that like tail through the sky.
Mm-hmm.
So if you see it like in Earth's atmosphere, meteor, if it's in space, like predictably it is a comet.
So when I'm catching shooting stars in Animal Crossing, uh-huh. what am I doing? Probably a comet, because I don't feel like they land. Hard to say.
But meteors don't. A comet doesn't end up in Earth.
No, that's what I'm saying.
Oh, I see. Yes.
Oh, a comet.
If it
lands
on Earth,
I'm probably in Animal Crossing wishing on a meteor.
And this is interesting, too, because thinking about stars and meteors and all of this, mm-hmm. we're going to get into. So asteroid. An asteroid field is just like a collect, like a bunch of them in a similar-ish spot.
Yeah.
And asteroids everywhere in space. Big rocks, chunks of rocks
mm-hmm.
in space all over.
Mm-hmm.
Have you heard of a famous asteroid field?
There is an asteroid belt.
Yes.
By Jupiter.
Very good. Oh, I kind of forgot where it was. So in a region, the famous asteroid belt in our, at least for Earthlings,
our solar system,
our solar system, is a region of space between Mars and Jupiter. That is where the asteroid belt is. Asteroids are everywhere, but the famous belt where there's a high density, so to speak, is between Mars and Jupiter. Now, let's get into the asteroid belt. The asteroid belt.
Pause. We have a development. Satchel found the treat.
How long has it been there,
that
Satchel?
That we tossed to see who would go first.
Good job. Good nice investigation. Job, little scientist.
Always eat what you find. You've taught her well.
They explore with their mouth. So our asteroid belt has the most asteroids in like an area for like our solar system. It has a estimated 100,000 asteroids larger than 1 kilometer.
Okay.
Now a kilometer, just for a helpful measurement, is about the length of the Golden Gate Bridge.
Oh,
so
okay.
Big. You know, But, you know, so over 100,000 asteroids about that size.
Can I say what I think you might be getting to?
You can say it.
100,000 Golden Gate Bridge-sized asteroids?
Pretty big.
Are not, but it's not that many or that big when you're thinking about, like, if they are surrounding the area between, what did you say, Mars and Jupiter? It's not that many, because that's a huge amount of space.
Yeah, so we're going to talk about the space part of it, because Golden Gate Bridge, pretty big. Mm-hmm. You do not want to hit that thing
but
if
not
you're floating
compared
in space.
To, yeah, okay. I'm gonna, yeah. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
so, and I think I forgot to mention, my citations are Scientific American, Caltech, and NASA. I did get this idea originally from our favorite show, QI, but I did not go back to dig into the research, because I just didn't want to repeat everything they've got.
Was this Stephen Fry QI or Sandy Totsvig?
I do not remember.
Okay, well.
I made a point of not just stealing all of their stuff. the largest asteroid in our that we have seen is Ceres, which some people have referred to as a dwarf planet. So, like, they get pretty big. It's about a quarter the size of the moon.
Wow.
But we're talking about big asteroids. There are also littler, smaller than a kilometer asteroids that are in the asteroid belt and all around. Some are so small that most regular telescopes have a hard time detecting them.
Wow.
Which kind of makes sense because, like, imagine trying to see the Golden Gate Bridge from sitting from our spot in space over, like, millions of miles away. Like, at Mars,
very
right?
Difficult.
Like, yeah, very Earth is hard. Like, Jupiter is like a dot from here.
Right.
So imagine seeing something thousands of times smaller than even
Jupiter.
Mars or Jupiter. So, yeah, like very hard to see a lot of those, even though they're there. But like you alluded to, Margaret, why are they dangerous or are they dangerous?
No.
The average spacing between asteroids is about 5 million kilometers.
That's 5 million Golden Gate Bridges.
Yes. A helpful way to break that down.
So a lot of space in between.
The Earth is 40,000 kilometers around. So if you were to just unfold the Earth's circumference, it would still take 125 circumferences of the Earth or journeys around the Earth just to make it from one asteroid to the other. You'd have to go around the Earth 125
times.
That
really puts it in perspective.
Just to reach it. Another way to think about this is the sun is how many miles away from the Earth?
65 million.
Close. 93 million.
Oh, okay.
That was pretty close.
Okay, hey.
So with that asteroid spacing, it's like saying between the Earth and the sun, there are only going to be 30 asteroids.
Not very many.
Not
very,
very
missable.
Many. Famously, the sun far enough away to not make us go ouch. it's also estimated that with that spacing, the average asteroid is only going to feel about or have feel whatever, only to, going to have like about one collision every few billion years with it, like something
so
hitting
your
it.
Odds are pretty good. that you're not going to bump into them.
To put this into some other terms, or with the ratio of 1 kilometer, the size of an asteroid, to 5 million kilometers, the average distance between them and the asteroid belt, it would be like standing on the Golden Gate Bridge. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yep.
And throwing 2 sesame seeds at random and hoping they hit each other. Sesame seeds.
Throwing them at the same time?
At the same time and hoping that they hit each other. You were standing anywhere, 2 people at random on the Golden State Bridge, throwing 2 sesame seeds at each other, mm-hmm, at random directions.
Oh, I see. 2 people are doing it. Yes. I pictured one person with them both in their hand.
No, it's just trying to hit.
That's pretty... Doesn't seem too harsh.
Because remember, this is a random distribution.
Right.
2 people facing really... random directions, randomly spaced on the Golden State Bridge, throwing 2 sesame seeds and the odds of them hitting each other.
Wow. Wow.
In fact, to put this into more perspective, NASA in the 1990s had the space telescope Galileo, which was meant to take pictures in space, eventually, mm-hmm, was crashed into Jupiter or Saturn, I forget. They had to specially program NASA, right? Mm-hmm. Very famously smart rocket scientists, mm-hmm, had to do all the intense calculations just to make sure they actually got near an asteroid to be the first to take a picture of it close up.
Wow.
And it got sent through the asteroid belt so that it could go to Jupiter.
So you have to work to...
They weren't worried about it hitting the asteroid belt as they hurtled it through it. They were wanting to make sure they actually even saw one of them. Uh-huh. And they did get a good picture of it. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of cool. So like you said, Margaret, the asteroid belt, a lot of asteroids close to each other, but relatively not that dangerous. That I would worry about. Mm-hmm. And you all might be thinking right now, like, well, famously, there was that one asteroid. Yes, yes, yes. I'll say it since the dinosaurs can't. There was a famous asteroid that hit us about 65 million years ago. Mm-hmm. Estimated to be 12 kilometers in diameter.
That's 12 Golden Gate Bridges.
Yes. I'm glad I gave you that reference. Which is huge. That's a huge asteroid. And the Earth has been calculated to be struck on average about once every 300,000 years. But again, they're not all 12 kilometers big. Mm-hmm. Many of them are small. You'll hear about them in the news sometime of something entering Earth's atmosphere. They are not all going to be that big. Mm-hmm. They don't really pose that big a threat. Most of the Earth's surface is water too, even if a slightly biggish one, not that big, mm-hmm, hits Earth. You don't need to worry about it. And if somehow you find yourself zooming through Jupiter, I really wouldn't worry about hitting an asteroid there either.
Thanks, Camden.
Yeah.
Good reminder to live life to the fullest.
Live life to the fullest. Live like you can't hit an asteroid. Dance like no one's watching.
Live like you won't be hitting an asteroid. All right. So mine is on a little bit of a different topic, just slightly.
Slightly.
You know, I've just been thinking a lot about a particular subject. Because there's been a lot of alarming rhetoric right now, and really for years, for many, many years in the country, about what people with uteruses can and can't do with their own bodies. Mm. And I thought we might explore 2 kind of mini misconceptions about the uterus, ovaries, fallopian tubes, and other reproductive system elements. The first mini misconception I'm going to tell you about is historical. And the second one is... pretty recent, from 2015.
Unfortunately, not.
And then next week, I'm going to, or next podcast, I'm going to get into a very current misconception.
Oh, you got like an episodic
about,
sort of.
About certain things about the uterus. So, the theme through both of these scientific misconceptions is that for hundreds of years, people have, out of either ignorance or apathy in a bid to control people's bodies, made assumptions about the uterus and other reproductive organs. And those assumptions have had these consequences, including seriously harmful consequences that we are still feeling today, that we are especially feeling today. So Let's dive in. My citations include the U.S. News article called Go Back to Health Class, St. Luke's Hospital in Kansas City, Wikipedia, Mental Floss, and a wonderful article called Hysteria, Witches, and the Wandering Uterus, A Brief History by Terry Capsalis on Literary Hub.
All right.
So, my first misconception. For a long time, and I mean hundreds of years, people believed that the uterus would just kind of wander around a person's body. You've heard this?
Wandering uterus.
The wandering uterus. Beginning with the ancient Greeks, there was this phenomenon.
Oh, so more than a few hundred years.
Yeah, yeah, sorry. Many, 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 many years. The idea was that a person's uterus would move about their body on its own for a variety of reasons and cause havoc.
It would cause havoc
if it did happen. Mm-hmm. It did not happen.
Yes.
In the second century AD, a physician wrote, quote, "The womb is moved of itself hither and thither in the flanks."
You know how scientists write. There and there, hence.
It is altogether erratic. The womb is like an animal within an animal. So the idea was that the womb would just like, on its own, of its own volition, move around under no one's control but its own.
Man, men are great.
Men are so cool and very, very smart. Now, I will say, not everyone in the medical field at the time agreed, and for the next centuries, agreed with this assessment. But the wandering womb theory continued to surface for many, many years.
Yeah.
And affected how people with uteruses were treated by the medical community and the community at large. People believed that the uterus could be coaxed to move around the body because it was attracted to good smells and repelled by bad ones, for example.
Yeah.
Smell was a big thing, right?
There
was this belief that bad smells, that bad smells cause diseases.
Okay.
Because there was,
That was like early germ theory.
Yes.
Oh, this rotting thing is causing this disease we have, mm-hmm. not this underlying reason why it started to rot.
There was correlation, causation.
Yeah, yeah.
There is a word for that. I will find it for next time. But so it kind of ties in with that, like good smells, healthy, bad smells, diseased. But this wandering uterus was blamed for basically any symptom that a person with a uterus could have. So according to Terry Capsalis, if a person lost their voice or was coughing, then they thought that the uterus had moved up into your throat.
Sure.
And if the person was having trouble breathing, then where might their uterus have moved, Camden?
Their lungs.
Their lungs.
It's the size of a fist. It can go wherever it wants.
It can go wherever it wants on its own, I guess. There were, of course, many remedies, I put that in quotes, for the wandering uterus, and many tactics were used to try to put the uterus back where it belonged. So, for example, putting a good-smelling balm by the genitals was hoped that that would bring the uterus back down as it was attracted to good smells. Of course, doctors or nurses also attempted genital massage with different implements to keep the uterus in place, as this extremely questionable technique was viewed as a cure for hysteria as well, which was, of course, another all-encompassing diagnosis that arose from the wandering womb theory. Some treatments for hysteria and a wandering womb were extremely traumatic and horrible, like forced ovariectomies, removal of the ovaries. And I didn't include some of the other things because this is a family-friendly podcast. But the best thing to keep the uterus from moving, can you guess? What do you think of the best thing?
You're saying the best thing for a thing that's not real?
Yeah. What was like the best cure for a womb that moves around?
Is this what a hysterectomy derived from?
Mm-mm,
oh, okay.
Think like, if you really wanted to keep people with uteruses...
Corsets.
No.
Or
what?
Not eating.
I'll just tell you. Pregnancy.
Oh.
Pregnancy was seen as the best way to keep that uterus from moving around. So like, what a cool cure. And it's very interesting, and I'm sure just a coincidence, that the diagnosis of wandering womb and hysteria accompanied by this like slew of awful treatments were on the rise as people with uteruses were trying to gain independence and they were trying to gain rights from themselves, including the pursuit of higher education and careers. So isn't that just a kind of a wild coincidence that happened? It's almost like you would think maybe if you were cynical that they were trying to control women and like keep them in their current positions.
Yeah.
In society.
If you were cynical. Yeah. If that wasn't actually like a representation and reflection of current societal norms also. Mm-hmm.
Yes, exactly. Right. But it's pure science. So
yep.
I'm sure it was just a coincidence.
Yep.
There were, of course, so many negative impacts from the belief in the wandering uterus. Not only was it a tool to keep women in the home, keep them in their sort of their gender roles, but it also could mean that real serious medical issues were ignored and instead attributed to a uterus that's wandering hither and thither.
Instead of like an actual underlying thing.
I need real treatment. I don't need this balm.
My lungs hurt and it's hard to breathe for an actual reason that's completely independent of me having a uterus.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. So these things, of course, were not treated, but lumped in under this false wandering womb theory. Okay. So fun fact, also from sort of the same, later in the same time period, but when steam-powered locomotives were gaining popularity, there was a belief that women shouldn't ride in them because their uteruses might fly out because of high speeds. They won't. That's another little misconception. Oh. And again,
bonus misconception.
I am sure that people with that belief didn't mean to keep people with uteruses from traveling and exploring the world and improving themselves. Another crazy coincidence.
Yes.
So that's our historical one, Cameron. What'd you think?
Great. Nervous about the next
number one. Two. This one's from 2015.
Yep.
You may remember this from 100 years ago in 2015 when Idaho state legislator Victor Barbieri was at a hearing about a bill that would prohibit doctors from prescribing pregnancy-ending drugs after telemedicine appointments. Is this starting to kind of ring a bell?
No, because it unfortunately is often so far in the news.
Yep. The doctor at the hearing was explaining that patients undergoing colonoscopies would swallow devices that would give medical staff a better understanding of a patient's digestive tract.
Okay.
And Barbieri, again, this legislator, said, quote,
not a doctor, legislator.
Not a doctor.
Okay, okay.
But someone who, you know.
Well, no, I'm just trying rules. To make sure what we're about to hear is who they're from.
Yeah, this is Barbieri, not the doctor. He said, quote, can this same procedure then be done in a pregnancy? Swallowing a camera and helping the doctor determine what the situation is.
Nice. The situation. Hopefully they don't have kids.
The answer is no. No. The uterus, ovaries, and fallopian tubes are an entirely different system than a person's stomach and intestines. You may think, like, of course it is. But people clearly are not aware of that fact.
I would unfortunately wager that it's not just like, I mean, we paint this, this might seem like, well, these very ignorant politicians who are clearly like, there might be some like sexist feelings to them and all this. But like you said earlier, there's a lot of ignorance that informs what these people think.
Mm-hmm.
Like this person is thinking these very ignorant things because they're ignorant. Like they don't know.
They don't know. Yeah.
And there are a lot of people who might not hold like evil in their heart, but not know this stuff and be like, sure, that makes sense.
Absolutely. And I don't, of course, this is a really good point that you make. I don't want to shame anyone for not knowing. We're all on a journey. We are all learning. And I don't want to stigmatize not knowing things. Obviously, of course. Like
that's the whole show where you have.
That's the whole show. But if you are in a position where you are making laws about a thing you don't know about, you have a duty to educate yourself about what is really going on.
And bringing in the people who do know.
And bringing in experts who do know. Exactly. Yeah.
Just like in a trial.
Yep.
If someone doesn't know how like you know, window glass breaks and mm-hmm. pattern. You bring in an expert mm-hmm. and not just sort of throw out ideas about how
the judge doesn't just sort of hypothesize yeah. about how it might go. Yeah. So if the uterus isn't connected to the stomach and intestines, what is it connected to? Great question, Camden. Can you tell me?
Me?
Yeah. What's the uterus connected to?
The uterus mm-hmm. is connect. I mean, it's the reproductive system is connected to itself. This is tricky because also there's like that famous little leap of faith. Things happen with like the ovaries and the fallopian tubes yes. where eggs.
Yeah. So you're right there. So the uterus is connected to the fallopian tubes, which carry eggs from the ovaries into the uterus. Uh-huh. And then on the other side, the uterus is also connected to the cervix, which leads to the vagina. So on one side, it's connected to the fallopian tubes. On the other, it's connected to the cervix. You'll notice that the stomach is not involved in this process.
Ever.
At all.
Not even yep. like a tiny tube that connects them.
No, there's no communication between the stomach and the uterus whatsoever.
Can I just say one thing yep. in case anyone's like super interested? Mm-hmm. I still think it's one of the most fascinating things of human evolution that when the eggs literally like erupt, burst from an ovary, mm-hmm. they sort of get shot into the fallopian tube like a basket
yeah.
ball into a basket. Mm-hmm. Like mm-hmm. they're not touching and no. connected. I just think that's like really cool.
Yes.
Anyway,
yeah.
If
thank you for
mentioning find that interesting, yeah, you should look at that.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead. Sorry.
It's incredible that humans exist.
Yeah. So much of evolution is like, why are we here?
How are we still here? How are we ever here? So like we've said, this misconception sort of represents the idea that people who are in power and who are making laws to govern people with uteruses, many of them have no knowledge at all about reproductive systems, and they have a huge impact on people's lives. It's frankly terrifying. Mm-hmm. And if you're thinking, man, she is really on her soapbox today. Correct. I am. It matters to me. It should matter to everyone.
People with uteruses or people without?
Both. It should matter to both. Because we really need to protect those people with uteruses who are having their bodies, basically the control of their bodies taken out of their hands. And luckily, if this makes you feel angry or depressed, like it has made me feel, there are things that you can do. So for example, on August 2nd, if you live in Kansas, there is going to be something on the ballot on August 2nd. And it is called the Value Them Both bill. It was named by people who are against the ability of someone to choose what happens with their body. But I would strongly encourage you, if you live in Kansas, to vote no on August 2nd. Please vote no on August 2nd. If you don't live in Kansas, but you know people who do, tell them. Because the whole strategy by the people who started this bill was to kind of keep it out of the news and mm-hmm. keep it from being well known. August is a really weird month for a vote, so that's another thing they're hoping for. But it's so important. It is really critical. It can have an impact on every single person's life. Vote no on August 2nd if you live in Kansas. And if you don't, research and see what's going on with your state, because there might be something similar happening there too. So thank you. I just think it's important to recognize the times when science and government combine.
Yeah.
And we got to use science to make sound decisions.
Thanks, Margaret.
Thank you, yeah, Camden.
I think recent national news has made it very clear that you do have to pay more attention to what's happening at the state level,
mm-hmm.
Because that's where a lot of the choices are now going to be made. Because of that. So mm-hmm. that was great. Mm-hmm. And I'm looking forward to next episode where we get to learn even more.
It's going to get preachy.
All right. So we're going to end our episode, like always, with something we're reading, watching, interested in. Margaret,
mm-hmm.
you went last. Do you want to go first or second?
I want to go first. Have we talked about Our Flag Means Death on here?
Yeah.
Okay, that's important to me as well. Our Flag Means Death is
a TV show.
A TV show on HBO. I'm not kidding. Life changing. I love that show. I love it so much. The other thing that made me think of asteroid belts is the new game that we're playing. What's it called? Heavenly Bodies.
Heavenly Bodies. Mm-hmm. Yes.
It's a wonderful game on the PS4.
You could do PlayStation, Steam, like on your computer, Xbox, not the Switch.
Basically, you're two little astronauts and you're floating around and you have to do these little missions. Like you need to send a little satellite out into space from your space station. You need to fix certain things around the space station. It's really cooperative. It's great. Heavenly Bodies. It's awesome. Camden?
Thanks, Margaret. I'm going to end, on a different note than that. On a recent Saturday afternoon in Buffalo, New York, I think we're all very aware of what transpired in a grocery store in a historically black neighborhood where 10 members of that community lost their lives truly because they are black. I know a lot of people right now are continuing to grieve, are continuing to mourn and try to understand why this keeps happening and what they can do about it. The importance, as always, is to never stop learning, to not be silent, and to continue to take action. I know as a white person, I am always still trying to learn and figure out what the best ways I can do that are. If you're still looking for reason or ways, this is certainly not the only way. You can go to www.buffalotogetherfund.org. They are providing a survivor's victim fund where 100% of the proceeds go to those who have survived either the incident or who have survived while their loved ones have not, to just pay for all of the things that are going on. There's still a lot of other like abolitionist work in the community, bail funds and things like that. You continue to look up in Buffalo and around where you live, but I continue everyone or please everyone continue to, as much as these things can be scary, often these things keep happening because we continue to be silent. And, I encourage you to, many people are going to take time to heal. But in that we always want to make sure that we actually move forward. So yeah, buffalotogetherfund.org.
Thank you, Camden. That's a really, really important thing to talk about. And that's great that that site exists to support people in that community. Thank you. And thank you all so much for listening today. If you liked this episode or any of our other episodes, please rate this podcast on your platform of choice and leave us a quick review. Written reviews help new listeners decide if they want to give us a try. So help us out, help new listeners out by leaving a quick positive review.
We also have a bookshop site, so you can look at every book that we've ever recommended. Support independent bookstores as well as our podcast by going to bookshop.org/shop/don't pee on your leg.
Don't Pee on Your Leg also has social media pages, including on Instagram at Don't Pee on Your Leg, at Twitter at Don't Pee on Your Leg, just the letter P, Facebook at facebook.com/don't pee on your leg.
Don't Pee on Your Leg and Other Scientific Misconceptions is a podcast produced by Two Birds, One Scone. Articles, blog posts, and more about what you can do every day to conserve our environment can be found at www.twobirdsonescone.org.
Original music is by Camillo. And if you have scientific misconceptions that you'd like explained or you want to provide feedback to us, please email us at don'tpeeonyourleg@gmail.com.
Have a great week.